It's glad to have you with us. Glad to have all of you with us. It's just y'all treating me too good here. The Murphys fed us this evening. They invited us over to eat. So we just took them up on it and brought the grand young'uns too. So we thought if they're going to feed us, we'd just make it worth their while. So if I get short of breath up here, I ate too much. She's a good cook. You know, we were talking about fellowship with God, so we're going to try to sort of stay focused on what maybe we need to do. We're not going to talk about a lesson on fellowship with God, but it sort of goes along with what we're thinking, I think. 2 Timothy 2, and verses 1 through 26 would cover the whole thing, but we're just going to look about one verse over there. Verse 15, we're going to kind of focus on that. You know, when you travel to another country, or when people from other countries travel here, there are two types of visas that you can receive, depending on what you're going to do. One is a tourist visa. If you go to a foreign country and you're on vacation, you're soaking up the sun, you're spending your money and you're relaxing, just killing time there, just coasting, just enjoying yourself, then you got one particular visa that you get for that. Stay a couple of weeks there till your money runs out or your vacation time runs out or whatever. That's the way most people travel when they travel abroad. That's what they do. However, there's another type of visa that you can get. Give you a completely different type of relationship when you go overseas. And that's a work visa. They call that a green card. And so when you have a green card, that means you're not over there to soak up the sun and just lay around and just enjoy yourself, but you're there to work. That's what the green card's all about. Having a green card changes everything about your whole experience in the country. It's a whole different mindset. I know. Common emphasis in Christian teaching today focuses on what God can do for you. And we very well should teach that, you know, because God is good to us. It does so much for us. Sometimes we focus on that, and sermons are preached on it. Books are written about it, about the benefits of the Christian life. And, of course, there are lots of benefits. We receive a lot of benefits when we come into the church. God's good to us, so good to us. We just have our prayers answered. We got fellowship one with another and just on and on and on. So to be honest, it's a valid emphasis when we tell you what all benefits you get from being a Christian. Simple truth is God gives us more than we could ever repay him for. Never give him enough in return for what he's given us, just the least bit. He gives us so much that we don't halfway earn, of course. It's just a gift to us. God gives and gives and gives. If you had to sum God up, he's a giver. One thing is a right relationship with him. If you got a right relationship with God, you can't put a value on that. There's no way to say what that's worth. It's your whole soul, your whole everything. He blesses us so much, peace, joy, love, mercy, forgiveness. He just pours it out. God's free with what he gives us. He always gives an overabundance when he gives to us. He's not meager portions. He just really just pours it out. So it's good to talk about the benefits coming from God, from knowing Christ. But we err, I think, if we don't emphasize the responsibility that we have back. Like I said, we can't repay him. But we have to show our appreciation by the way we live and the things we do. We can't just stand there and say, give me, give me, give me, and never give anything back, even though we can't repay him. We have to show our appreciation. So there's things we need to do. One thing I've noticed that many people live their lives, their Christians' lives, like they're on a tourist, like they're a tourist somewhere overseas with a Visa card. And they're taking a tour over there and they're soaking up the sun and they're just laying around doing nothing. They want to look at the Christian life sort of like it's a vacation. Well, it's not. I think just we're looking at it wrong when we look at it like that. We just can't take and take and take and never give anything back. We're not on vacation. The Bible tells us this world's not our home. You know, we're just passing through. We're just sojourning through here, I think is the way one fellow put it. We live our lives as strangers in a strange land. Well, that's completely true. When you look at it, we're the citizens of heaven. Right now, if you look at it, we're members of God's kingdom. We're citizens of heaven. You know, we talked the other night about our name being written in the Lamb's Book of Life. We're registered up there. So that's who we are. We just haven't gotten to heaven yet, but that's who we are. We're on our way to go there. So this world that we're in here, 2 Corinthians 4:4 tells us that Satan is the god of this world. He's the prince of darkness. So this world, God is in control of everything. The whole world, God's in control of the world. He's in control of everything that goes on. But he allows so much evil to go on. He allows Satan to do certain things. We have to, this is a proving ground for us. So Satan is the god of this world. So we're not of this world. We're in this world, but we're not of this world. So we have to bide our time here in this world and put up with Satan and whatever he's doing and try to show everybody else how we're supposed to live. But we're just foreigners here. But here's what I want you to see. We're not here on a tourist visa. Even though we're foreigners here, it's not like we went over to Europe or somewhere. We're here to work. We got a green card, if you will. If you see what I'm saying, if you follow me there. You got a green card, and it's been stamped for approval that you're supposed to work in God's kingdom. That's what we're all supposed to be doing. We work in different areas and do different things. We're all different. We're made different, and God expects different things from all of us. We've been adopted into God's family. When you think about that, it's hard to fathom that, but that's what we've been done to. Is you're his child, his heir. He wants to bless you. He wants to make your life good. God is for you. He's on your side. So many times people think, well, God's up there just taking names, and he's just watching for all the bad things that we might be doing. God's on our side. A lot of times he steers us away from wrong and danger. We don't even know it. He takes care of us. So you should never point your finger at God and say he's just taking names. God's on our side. He loves us. We're the ones that rebel. Heard a fellow say one time, he said, if I ever get in a pickle myself, find myself in a pickle, he says, because I jumped into the vinegar. We do it to ourselves. We shoot ourselves in the foot. God's on our side. So we can't blame anybody but ourselves. I told Paula I wouldn't hardly be able to breathe since she gave me so much food there a while ago. But you can't hurt feelings. You know, you have to eat. You know, talking only about what you get from God leads to the entitlement mindset. An entitlement mindset leads you to that tourist visa mentality, if you follow what I'm saying. Have you ever met anybody that just felt like they were entitled? They have that persona about them. They have a sense that they're privileged people. They're entitled to the best. Have you ever worked with anybody like that? Because of who their parents are, how they were raised, how much money they've got, or this and that, on and on and on. They think they're just a little bit better than you are. And they feel like the rules don't apply to them. You ever seen anybody like that? They think they deserve special treatment. Well, I've worked with people like that. Some of them, they think the world owes them a living, some of them. It's hard to work with people like that because you got to do your share and part of theirs sometimes. And when they've got that mindset, they've been raised like that, you can talk to them, you really can't reach them. You know, they just sort of raised like that. It's ingrained in them, and you can't get it out of them hardly. There's a lot of people like that. We need to avoid this sense of entitlement. I think that's a danger when we look at the abundant life that we have, what God has given us. He's so good to us. Sometimes we get to expecting the best. We think maybe that we're better than others. Sometimes we think we're entitled to more, I think. That leads us to think that we don't have to do anything but just sit back because we're special people. We need to reject that notion about the abundant life. God did give us the abundant life. That's what he desires for all of us, and he's going to give us a whole lot more if we persevere here. But this life of coasting and living on spiritual handouts is not what it's about. So we need to realize, we need to kind of do our share, you know, carry our load, so to speak. We need to work back. We can't repay God, but we have to show him our appreciation, as I said. Fact is, we are privileged people, very much so. I think everybody in here will agree with that. You can probably testify and give stories. We're children of the King. You know, that's something to be proud of, something not, I don't like to use the word proud, but in lack of a better word, God has chosen you to be his very own. We're all very different, every one of us. So we got Our whole, our DNA is different. Our fingerprints are different. There's no two people alike. You can take a couple of twins and they're very different. God made us different for a reason. We're all different, but He's got a use for every one of us. Always remember that. You're special to God. He's got a job for you. Something you can do that nobody else can do. You might can do the same job as somebody else, but you'll do it differently. Brother Ricky got up right here right now. Brother Mark, any of you speakers, Brother Edward, anybody that speaks, if you get up here and let me sit down, you take this lesson, it would take a twist. Be the same title, same lesson, but you would do it differently. And you might have a whole lot better effect on the audience than I'm having. That's the way it is. We're all different. God has chosen you to be His. He's adopted you as His own, and He has forgiven you. He's forgiven all of us. All of us that are members, He's given you a brand new life. He wants to bless you every part of your life. He's there for you, and He also wants to help you to become all that you can be. Sometimes we don't do our part to be all that we can be. I wonder if we've ever done all that we could do. I had a school teacher one time. He had us to write a theme. He'd come up with these crazy things, wanting us to write themes, and he said, do you think you've ever used your mind to its fullest capacity? And he wanted us to expound on that and talk about that. Of course, nobody in the room thought they had. I don't believe we have. And I don't think we've all served God to our fullest capacity either. We don't put our all into it. Sometimes we're just kind of halfway, do mediocre. We just sort of do what it takes to get by sometimes. But He wants us to bless. He wants to bless us. He wants us to be all that we can be. And He'll help us do that if we'll decide to do that. You pray to God and say, God, help me to be all that I can be, and see if your life doesn't change. I promise you that it will. If you'll ask God to help you to do what He wants you to do, what He made you to do, well, He's going to help you do it. It's exactly what He wants from you. He wants you to become good. He wants you to become like Jesus. That's what we're supposed to do, and that's what He wants to see out of us. So today I'd like to look at how that process works. We'll take a look at the life of the privileged and develop it into the life of workmanship. That's what we need to do. Take this privilege we've got, start working a little bit. Start doing something. There's room out there for lots of work. The fields are white under harvest, as they say. That's an understatement, really. I don't think we do enough evangelism. We don't get out enough and talk to people. We don't share the gospel with enough people. If we did, we'd have more people in church. Today I want to look at, like I said, 2 Timothy chapter 2, where Paul challenges Timothy along these very same lines. Timothy was a young man. He was Paul's protege. He sort of took him under his wing. He'd been given a big job to do. He was overseer over the church there in Ephesus, and they had several. They met in the houses in those days. There was several houses there, and he was kind of overseer over it, but he was a very young man. He was responsible for the leadership, the administration. He had a lot on him to do all that. So some of the things that Paul said to Timothy in the two letters, we see that Timothy was kind of shy and timid, and he was intimidated because he was so young. You can imagine if all of us were my age in here, or middle-aged or whatever, and we had some young man in here. I don't know how old Timothy was, but let's say we had an 18-year-old boy in here just telling us what to do. He would feel a little intimidated, and we'd feel a little awkward too, wouldn't we? But that's what his job was. So Paul would write him these letters to encourage him and uplift him because of the job he had to do. So this is what he told him in 2 Timothy chapter 2, verse 15. He says, "Study to show thyself approved unto God, a workman that needeth not to be ashamed, rightly dividing the word of truth." Another version there where it says, "Show thyself." Another one says, "Present yourself to God." That's another rendition there. There's some things that I want to point out that will help us to this tourist mindset, this visa mindset, this mentality I was talking about. Quit thinking about we're on vacation, but realize we got the green card and we need to go to work. First of all, consider your life as sort of a payback. If If you do that, like I said, we can't pay God back. We can't earn what we've got. But another way to say it is work to be worthy of the gifts you've been given. We can't just keep taking and taking and taking because we're never going to be worthy. But he gives us more than we ever possibly deserve, and he just keeps giving us more and more and more. We're in debt that's way over. You can't earn his favor. You can only receive it. But we're challenged to try. So let's try and see how much we can give back to him, see what we can do for him. I heard a college professor say once, who told his class on the first semester, he said, I'm going to try something different with y'all. He said, what I've done is, he said, I've given every one of you an A already. He said, so now for the next 14 weeks, I challenge you just to fall in love with this subject. And he said, all you got to do now is just study it for all you're worth and learn all about it that you possibly can. You know, it's a pretty good thought there. I don't know how it worked out. That was all I read was that. You know, it was a pretty good idea. But I can see where it might work because I know a lot of times when I was in school, in high school, I didn't go to college. When I was in high school, we'd have a test coming up, and so I'd grab the book and I'd look at the main points I thought in the chapter was going to have a test on, and I'd just look at that and I'd try to memorize that so I could pass the test. That pretty well worked. So I can imagine college students probably try some of that. So they wouldn't have to do that. If they already had an A going in, if they already had an A for this first semester, then they could just relax. They didn't have to worry about wasting mom and dad's tuition. They didn't have to worry about all that, all the money being spent in case they failed the grade. They could just go ahead and study this at their own leisure, relax with it. There wouldn't be any pressure. And they'd probably learn more. Probably learn more than the tactic that I had, just picking out little high points here and there so I could pass the test. I missed the whole chapter by doing that. I just had a few high points. So that was probably a pretty good idea. But you know, in a sense, that's what God has done for us, if you think about it. Paul didn't say to Timothy, do your best to earn God's approval. He didn't say that. Instead, he said, do your best to present yourself to God as one approved. You've already been approved. He said, just show him you appreciate being approved. He's saying, you've been approved. You've already gotten an A. Now make an effort to live up to it. So like what that professor was telling them. That's what God has done for us. He's already given us an A. He's got our name written up there. We're in God's kingdom. We're there. We're promoted pretty much. So we ought to go ahead and try to act like maybe that we care and we appreciate it. Everything we do in the Christian life is not done in order to gain God's favor. You know, sometimes maybe if you're in school, you might try to get favor from the teacher. You know, if you're at work, you might try to get the boss to like you or this and that. We don't have to try to get God's favor. We've already got his favor. He already loves us. So we don't have to do that. We couldn't fool him anyway if we were just trying to trick him. But everything we do is in response to God's favor. He's already given it to us. So he's already given us the A. He already gave us his favor. So it's a win-win for us. That's what Paul is asking Timothy to do to you and to me. You've been brought into the family of God. You've been given the name of Christ. We wear the name of Christian. You've been given all of this. So now do your best, Paul says. Do your best. Walk in the manner worthy of your name that you've received. Try to live up to this name. You're Christian, and people know that. People know around about. They know pretty much a lot of us are in the church. So we need to live in such a way that we wear the name well. You know, you don't want to. You'd hate to get in jail and bring down your family name. You know, if you got in jail and the family name Thompson or whatever, you wouldn't want that being in the paper. You wouldn't want folks to see that. By the same way, or even worse, you wouldn't want folks to see that you're a Christian. You're wearing the name of Christ, and you brought his name down. You wouldn't want to do anything to hurt that name. So wear that name well. He was telling him, you need to live in such a way that you wear the name well. How does one go about doing that? Well, this brings around the second thing I'd like to say. Consider yourself in training, pretty much. We are in training, you know, no matter what age we are. We're in this world. We're trying to serve God. We're in training. That's why we come to church all the time. We hear lessons and we try to retain something. A lot of times we get something new. When you read the Bible, many times you learn something new. So we're in training. It's a growing process. We never learn it all. We never learn it all. I've heard people say that have been in church for years. They say, "Well, I never heard that before. I didn't know that. I learned something." They'll say that. I've heard people say that. I'm talking about knowledgeable people. I've heard them say that. Some that's really read the Bible and knew a lot about it. But they'd see something that it enlightened them. So it's a learning process. We're growing. So consider yourself in training, because we are. We're in training. We're trying to get so that if we do finally get to heaven, and we're learning to have fellowship with God, is what we're supposed to be focusing on this week. So if we're trained to do that, then maybe we fit in. You know, if all of a sudden we're just raised up in heaven, like right now, if you just all of a sudden you were in heaven, standing right there before God, would you fit in? Have you ever wondered about that? Would you be like a fish out of water, or would you fit in? Would you know what to say to God if you were allowed to speak to Him? Think about that. You know, if we're not in fellowship with Him, if we're not close with Him, if we don't talk with Him a whole lot, we might be lost for words when we got there. William Barclay translates it this way. He said, "Put out every effort to present yourself to God." The phrase "present yourself" is typically used in the context of showing up for work or reporting for duty. That's what it's saying there. And when he says present yourself, make yourself available, and like Isaiah said, "Here am I, send me." He said that's what you need to do. Paul then says, "Do this as a workman who does not need to be ashamed." He's talking about the quality and the integrity of our efforts, and he's talking about our life and our works that honor Christ. You know, if we get out and we work, if I'm saying all this to you and you've just been working all week for God, you're not ashamed a bit, are you? What I'm saying to you is not bothering you in the least. But in case you haven't, if you haven't worked all week or last week or the week before, if it has been a while since you have, then we might be workmen that are ashamed. So he was telling him, he said, be a workman that need not be ashamed. So when you go out and do what you're supposed to, you can hold your head up. You know you've done what God wanted you to do. You can't control the results of your efforts, of course. You know, you can do whatever you want to. God's the one that's in control. People's got a mind of their own. The devil's certainly got a mind of his own, and he's going to try to stop your efforts if you can. So you may get out and do good. You may talk to people. You may have the Bible, thump the Bible and talk to them and tell them just exactly what they need to do. Might not do a bit of good in the world. So you can't control the efforts. You can control what you do. You're in control of your efforts, but you can't control what happens. You can't control what happens in the end. You can control how much of yourself you put in your Christian life, how much you put into your Bible study, how much effort you put in serving others, how much effort you put into your job, on and on and on. You can control your effort. But the outcome, you may lose every time. You might not get anywhere with the outcome. But Paul says, report for duty and do it in such a way that you will not be ashamed. So if you report for duty and you work all day long, you have nothing to show for it, but you worked anyway, then you don't have to be ashamed. That's the way it works. You may talk to someone about your soul, have Bible studies with them, pray with them, try to lead them to Christ, do everything you can. Try your very best to lead them to Christ, but they may never come into the church. As far as you know, they may just go their way. You didn't do a bit of good talking to them. And if that's the case, you have still worked. That's what we have to see. Sometimes people will do that. They'll talk to somebody and they'll try it and they say, "Well, I just can't get anywhere with it. I've talked to a couple of folks at work. They get mad at me and walk off. And I don't get anywhere with that. I'm just going to quit doing that." Don't quit doing that, because that's not what it's all about. Because if you talk to somebody, you still pleased God. You planted the seed there. Somebody else might come maybe 6 months later and talk to them and tell them something different, and it clicks. Maybe they thought about what you said and what they said, and they put it together, and maybe it worked. Maybe they decided to come into the church. Maybe you played a part and didn't know it. You don't have to know it. It's not about pride on your part anyway, is it? It's not say, well, I caused this one to come into the church. That's not what it's about. As long as you do your part, then leave it up to God. He will add the increase. You know, I don't know what verse it was there, but Paul said that he planted the seed and Apollos watered it, and he said, God gives the increase. That's the way it goes. God gives the increase. It's up to God. It's up to the individual and God for them to do that, for them to work that out. So you just plant the seed and water it and go on. That's all you do. And then you don't have to be ashamed. You can hold your head up. But I guarantee you it's not an all loss there. If you spend a couple of weeks talking to some fella, some family, somebody you talk to, somebody on the street, somebody you work with, maybe you spend a whole month, you have a Bible study with them, you spend a whole lot of time studying the Bible from front to back, you go through a pretty good study there, you give them an overview of the Bible, you tell them what Jesus was about, you tell them how to come into the church, tell them so many things. And then they say, well, I'll think about it, and that's about it, and they go on, you go on. I guarantee you, you'll be a better Christian for having done it. It helped you. If it didn't help him at all, it helped you. So the next time you try it, you'll be better at it. It might be something you forgot to say the first time. Next time, you're experienced. Experience counts a lot, doesn't it? So it's not a lost cause. So don't ever give up. Don't ever give up when you're doing God's work. We can't look at it like we're losers with this. If you're working, if you're doing God's work, you're growing. And if you're growing, that's worth a lot for you to grow. Because eventually it's going to pay off. If for nobody else but you, it'll pay off, won't it? You know, if you think about it, Jesus preached to the multitudes. He converted very few people. But you know what? He did the will of his Father. Think about it. He did the will of his Father. Even though there were so many. Of course, he had a lot of things going against him and did well. He did 100%. I'm not taking anything away from what he did. I'm saying you can't convert everybody. You cannot. It's not going to happen. So don't give up. Jesus didn't. He did what he was supposed to do. You know, we seem to know that if you want excellence, if you watch the Olympics and you see those folks on there, some of the things they do, it's incredible that stuff they do. But you know, how come they can do that so good? They start when they're just little old bitty kids. And every day while all the other kids are out riding the bicycle, playing ball, swimming, whatever they're doing, these little kids are practicing this one thing over and over and over. And they do that till they get up about 16 or 18 years old, whatever. And they go for that one moment of glory with the Olympics. They go over there and they try out to see if they can get a little gold medal, silver medal, or whatever they can get, bronze medal. They spent their life. They gave their whole youth for that. I don't see it myself, you know, but some people, they want fame, I guess. But right now, if they told me, if they guaranteed me, if I just practiced 3 hours a day, 2 years from now, I'd get a gold medal in anything I chose, I'd say, I don't think I need that, you know. Maybe if I was a kid, I might want that, but. You think about that, what all they put into that for one moment's glory. They get their name on TV, on the paper, and whatever, get the gold medal. They've spent their whole life up to that point, pretty much. They lived and breathed whatever it is they're doing. Musicians, whatever you look at, if you really go at it seriously, some of those piano players, if they play in concert halls and all, they've been playing the piano 40 years. Not only did they spend 40 years learning to play the piano, but they had to practice 2 or 3 or 4 hours a day to keep it up so they don't lose it. How many hours do they put into that? So we know when it comes to things temporal in this world, we know it takes time and effort and work to put into it to get it, to accomplish it. We know that. We understand that. But if you want your spiritual life to be where it should be, it takes time and effort too. It's not going to just haphazardly fall into place. You're going to have to work at it. We're going to have to work at it. And we won't have to work at it as hard, I don't think, as some of those Olympic gold medalists. Some of them. If we had them working in the church, what would we have? If you think about that, I wish we could convince some of them to come into the church. It'd be a good influence on the rest of us, wouldn't it? You need to have the same attitude, same approach with your spiritual being as they do. Keep preparing yourself for whatever's coming next, because we don't know what's coming next. Brings us to the next thing I want to talk about. Consider the Word of God your daily guide. You know, the only way we're going to know how to serve God is to read the Bible. And you can listen to other people talk, whatever you want to do. And there's nothing wrong with that, but sometimes you got to go behind them and see what they're saying. I could tell you something wrong, and I could mislead you if you don't know anything about the Bible. If you didn't know anything about the Bible, I could tell you a whole bunch of stuff. And a lot of preachers will do that. Listen to the radio and TV, they'll tell you a whole lot of stuff. And a lot of people fall for that simply because they're ignorant and unlearned. They don't know anything about the Bible. They don't read it for themselves, and they take the preacher's word. He can tell them anything he wants to. I've listened. I used to, on the road when I was working, and I'd be riding between stops and whatever, I'd have Christian radio on sometime, listen, trying to get an idea for a lesson, to be honest, what I was doing, because you run out of ideas to talk about. And you could hear some crazy things that they would tell. And people just thought they were just so wonderful. And they'd just make it up as they went on. They'd just tell anything. They'd actually contradict themselves. If you listen to them 2 or 3 weeks in a row, they'd come back with something else. The only way we're going to know is like the Bereans, you know, they read the Bible every day and checked to see if what they were saying was true. That's what you have to do. And if you don't know what the Bible's saying, if you don't know if it's true or not, look it up. Look up one verse at a time. You're better off to look at one verse than you are to read the whole Bible. I read the whole Bible through one time just to say I did it. So I can stand here and tell the truth, tell you I read the Bible in its entirety from front to back. It took me a while to do it. But I did it solely for the purpose so that I could say that. Didn't learn one thing, honesty. I did not learn one thing. You're better off to take one verse and read it, dissect it and look at it and see what it says and learn it and understand it. If you got one verse, better off to read a whole chapter. If you just read a whole chapter and go to bed and go to sleep and say, I read a chapter last night, it's not really worth anything if you didn't learn anything from it. You're better off to just read one verse or two verses, whatever you got time for, and study. Study the Bible like that. We need to study it. Especially if you hear a sermon, somebody talks about something, listen to what they say, and if you got doubts about it, look it up, because they could be wrong. They could be wrong. I try very, very, very hard to not get anything wrong about doctrine. I try very hard with that. But Julie can tell you, sometimes I'll say, look over there in 1 Timothy, and it'll be in Romans. You know, I'll get something like that wrong sometimes, and carelessly wrote down the wrong thing. But I try my best not to mislead anybody on doctrine, anything that would cause you to be lost. So double-check anybody that's in the pulpit, but read the Bible. Do your best to present yourself as to God as one approved, a workman that is not ashamed to rightly divide the Word of God. Paul is saying, know the Word, study the Word, live according to the Word. That's a commandment for all of us. He was talking to Timothy, but it's there for us. We're supposed to do that. Make it a habit. Read the Bible daily. You know, the Bible's so available today. You can get it on CD. You can listen to it in your living room. You can listen to it in the car going down the road. And I don't know about you, but I like some of those CDs. Some of those Englishmen, the one I got, he's got the English voice. And he sounds like he's just right there next to God when he's reading that Bible. You know, you listen to him, he gets your attention. And, you know, I got it on my cell phone. It's a free app. It doesn't cost anything. So if you don't have the CD with you in the car, if you're not at home, if you're off anywhere, just pull it up on your cell phone. The Bible is so handy, so easy. You can't say, I don't have time to read the Bible, because it's so accessible, more so than it's ever been. You know, if you'll study the Bible day in, day out, it will reveal to you what God's about. You'll know more about having a personal relationship with God. It'll tell you where you are. It's sort of a mirror. You know, somebody said one time, not only do you read the Bible, but the Bible reads you. It's so true. It does. It will let you see who you are. You may be fooled about who you are, but you read the Bible, you'll find out. You read about commands that you need to obey, things that you need to do, things that you've been doing wrong, whatever. You'll read it in the Bible. The more time we spend in the Word of God, the better workers we'll become. And we'll avoid being thinking we're on tour somewhere in Europe. We're just Christians. We got all these things that are given to us, and we're not supposed to do anything because we're so special. Spend time in the Word of God every day, and you'll be a better Christian for it. You'll be closer to God, and you won't have to be ashamed. You can hold your head up. That's my lesson. I hope maybe that we might be encouraged to just follow that verse there, the one that he used with Timothy there, 2 Timothy 2:15. If anyone here desires the service of the church for whatever reason, we invite you to come while we stand and sing.